Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Colorado is moving on from the Jared Polis era. Democrats at odds with their governor's recent decisions have two choices to replace him. Attorney General Phil Weiser's made a name for himself, taking on President Donald Trump in dozens of legal fights. Senator Michael Bennett wants to leave Washington to come home and lead Colorado and also pick his replacement in the Senate. Colorado's Republicans have only managed to elect one governor in the last half century, which could make this Democratic primary fight the decisive choice for Colorado's future. This is Next Presents The Race for Governor.
Thank you for joining us. We are here at the Welcome Center on the beautiful campus of the University of Denver. I'm Kyle Clark alongside Marshall Zellinger. Our audience tonight has agreed to refrain from interruption or applause, with this exception, as we introduce the Democratic candidates for Colorado Governor, Attorney General Phil Weiser and U.S. Senator Michael Bennett. Thank you to both for being with me.
Except for these introductions in all of our debates, we don't refer to candidates using elected or educational titles. You as voters will determine through your ballot if either of these candidates will hold the title of governor. Candidates, you've agreed to a few ground rules in advance. 1 minute answers, which you'll see on this monitor right here. Continued discussion at our discretion, 1 minute closing statements, and a chance to ask each other questions as we respectfully explore where you agree and disagree.
Polling shows that your Democratic Party is increasingly unpopular in Colorado, even as Coloradans reject the idea of electing Republicans to statewide office. If you're elected governor, you will become the face of your party in Colorado. Why do you think the Democratic Party is losing the confidence of Democrats and unaffiliated voters, and how do you turn that around? Mr. Bennett.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I want to thank Channel 9 and DU for having us today. Phil, it's great to see you again. As ever, if you've been following my campaign, you know that, as usual, I speak the truth even when it's tough for my own party. And I'm deeply discouraged that the Democratic Party lost to Donald Trump twice nationally. You mentioned that it's unpopular here in Colorado, or it's growing less popular in Colorado, and I think that's true. And I think it's a tragedy that we lost two national elections to Donald Trump. And we need to get our act together. And here in Colorado, I believe this state really is a purple state in its spirit. And it needs a governor who's going to govern the entire state, Republican or Democratic or unaffiliated. People are really impatient with the parties. In fact, people my kids' age hate the parties. And they don't believe that they're standing for them. And I think the Democratic Party and the Republican Party both have a lot of work to do.
Mr. Bennett, thank you. Same question to you, Mr. Weiser. Why is the Democratic Party losing the faith of Democrats and unaffiliated voters? How do you change that?
For too many people, the Democratic Party doesn't show up, listen, and fight for you. The view across Colorado, particularly rural communities, working class communities, is I don't see you, maybe other than election time. For me, this has been a challenge since I started running for office. I've gone to every single county in Colorado, all 64 counties. And I've gone there again and again. Matt Scherr is an Eagle County commissioner who decided to endorse me with an interesting test. He asked his Republican county commissioner colleagues, what Democrat do you trust to show up in your community? The answer that Matt heard from all across Colorado was me, because I will show up. When it's fighting the King Soopers Safeway merger, I showed up all across Colorado, did 19 town halls. Fighting the opioid crisis, I showed up all across Colorado. If people know that you care about them, that you're fighting for them, they can support you. If they think you don't care and you don't show up, they can't.
Could I say
something? Both of you gave a perfectly timed 60-second answer, despite the fact that our timer was malfunctioning and you didn't have it. You will have the timer for the rest of the debate, or so I am told. You take issue with something you just said?
I don't take issue with it. I just think this isn't about rhetoric. It's not about showing up. It's about the fact that Colorado is the third most expensive state in America to live. It's about the fact that people are killing themselves here and can't live a middle class.
Our next question is about affordability. You'll both have an opportunity to
speak
to it.
Let's talk about that, Mr. Bennett. One of the top issues for voters, no matter what party they're in, is affordability. While Democrats have held power in this state, Colorado's become less affordable. Cost of rent, homeowners insurance going up, property taxes going up. We'll start with you, Mr. Bennett. What's your answer for a voter who's been waiting for a Democrat to make life less expensive just to find out they're paying more each year?
My answer is we need new leadership in Colorado. My answer is this is completely unacceptable. When I followed Susan to Colorado, that's how I got here. She's, by the way, teaches at DU Law School. When I followed her here, we were able to buy a starter home in this community. I'm not going to tell you what it costs because people that are younger than we are start to cry when I tell them how affordable it was. We raised our three daughters in this beautiful state, and we lived the American dream. And all over Colorado, that's no longer possible. When I used to be the superintendent of schools, I had faculty meetings every day in schools near the one we're in today, and I never met a teacher who didn't live in Colorado or didn't live in Denver. And now you can't live in Denver if you're a teacher. And if you live on the western slope of Colorado in the Roaring Fork Valley, the only way a teacher can afford to live there is if they win the housing lottery that their school district is running. So until we address this issue of people working hard and not being able to have the American dream for their kids, I think we're going to continue to see the rise of Trumpism in America. And that's what we have to fight.
Mr. Weiser, I heard Mr. Bennett say new leadership. You both have D's next to your name. D's already in control. So, Mr. Weiser, how will you convince voters to trust another Democrat to make this state more affordable?
I'm going to convince people to trust me based on my commitment. What people deserve is if you're a teacher anywhere in Colorado, you should be able to afford a starter home in the community where you work. If you're a firefighter or a police officer, it's important that you can afford to live in your community. That's what people deserve. That's not the case right now. When you look at my track record on this opioid crisis, for example, you see I can bring people together across the state to get things done. The response framework we developed has been praised from John Oliver, called it the gold standard, to Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. What I will do is build a plan so that we can have starter homes that are affordable by incentivizing the types of homes we need. Right now, if you build a mega mansion or a starter home, the permitting fee is the same. The time to get the permit's the same. We need to change that. We need to make sure incentivizing townhomes, more density, condominiums, and we need to make sure we have down payment assistance so those teachers and those firefighters, nurses can afford to buy those homes.
Thank you, Mr. Weiser.
Mr. Weiser, I'm sure you know the saying, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. You have wielded the legal hammer of the Attorney General's office to pound a lot of nails through lawsuits over the last 8 years, but you won't have that hammer if you're elected governor. Why should Coloradans be confident that you can lead and govern without the primary tool that you have used over and over and over again?
When I took on the opioid crisis, I did take on big pharma, companies like Purdue Pharma, Johnson & Johnson, and more, and I brought back $900 million to Colorado. But here's the important part, Kyle. What happened next? I didn't say my job is done. I worked with people like Raquel Garcia. Raquel is an advocate who leads in peer support. And I listened. I said to Raquel, how do we build more peer counseling to help people live in recovery? And across the state, we brought everybody together, a community of practice that didn't exist before I was Attorney General, a community of practice that now exists to address the crisis. And to give you a concrete example of leading by listening, we had our first conference. I said to Raquel, they served alcohol at this conference. Is that okay with you? Raquel said no. And we've never had alcohol at our conferences afterwards. That may be a small example, but it lifts up a powerful point. I've shown leadership by listening and by getting things done.
Mr. Weiser, thank you. Mr. Bennett, there were only 7 Senate Democrats who voted to support more of President Trump's cabinet picks than you did. You supported Chris Wright for Energy Secretary. You supported Brooke Rollins for Agriculture Secretary. She tried to pull SNAP food benefits from Colorado. You supported Doug Burgum for Interior, where he's been implementing Trump's rollbacks on environmental and conservation rules. And the thing is, none of this was a surprise, right? I mean, they're implementing the agenda that was laid out in Project 2025, the blueprint that we all read before the election. You've said that you regret your vote for Chris Wright for Energy Secretary. Based on what he's done to Colorado. Could you walk voters through whether you stand by all of your other votes for Trump's cabinet?
I stand by the ones that you just raised, and I think you made an important point, which is none of their record is a surprise to me. But the reality is that Colorado and the American West are going through an existential fire crisis, and we need the resources that the Forest Service is bringing to bear in Colorado. We need the resources that the Interior Department is bringing to bear in Colorado. The easiest vote in America is to vote against one of Donald Trump's nominees. But when it's the right thing to do for Colorado, when it's the right thing to have the resources that we need and the attention that we need, I've done that. And even as recently as last week, I convened all the Western Democrats and Republicans in the Senate to meet with the Secretary of Agriculture and the Secretary of Interior to make sure that Alaska has the fire resources they need, to make sure that Arizona has the fire resources they need, and that Colorado will have the fire resources we need again. So that is the answer to your question.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett.
Can I respond to that?
You may.
This is a real difference. I believe when someone is breaking the law and harming you, as Brooke Rollins has done a number of times, you don't say, I still support you. You say, shame on you, I'm sorry I voted for you, because you're hurting us. Taking away SNAP benefits from 600,000 Coloradans mean you're threatening people's next meal, which she did twice. I sued both times. We won both times. As for fighting fires, she tried to fire firefighters from the Forest Service last year, right before fire season. I sued her about that. We won too.
May I respond?
I will always stand strong against a lawless, bullying administration. Never try to curry favor or accommodate them.
I think you've lost your clock again, by the way.
No clock runs on rebuttals or redirects, on the original question.
Thank you. Let me just go back to this. I mean, I didn't vote for these people because I agree with their policies. I voted for them because the work that we're doing is critically important, and it's not political. I mean, it is critically important. The fire risk in Colorado is existential. The lack of water in Colorado is existential. Sometimes you have to work with people that you profoundly disagree with. And what I resent is that somehow the Attorney General thinks that's a test of how tough I am. As I said earlier, the easiest vote in America is for a Democrat to vote against these people. But I did it because it was the right thing to do for Colorado. And the Attorney General says he's really tough, but was completely missing in action in Donald Trump's first term when more than 20 Democratic attorneys general across this country filed a lawsuit against the administration because they were separating kids from their parents at the border. That was very serious from my perspective. And he has been, and your fact check demonstrates this, he sued the Trump administration almost fewer times than any other Democratic attorney general during the first time that Donald Trump was president. So if this is a question of toughness or willing to stand up against the Trump administration, I think he failed that test when he refused, unlike the other Democrats who did, to ride to the rescue of the children that were being marooned from their parents on the southern border of the United States.
Mr. Bennett, thank you. We actually want to discuss that more in depth, and we want to hear from you, Mr. Weiser, on that as well.
Mr. Bennett, your campaign is suggesting currently, not the first term, this term right now, that your opponent is suing the Trump administration too much as a political stunt. Specifically now, which of the 65 lawsuits would you back Colorado out of?
You know, for me, Marshall, it's not about the lawsuits he brought. It's the lawsuits he didn't bring.
Well, I'm asking about the fact, ones
Yeah,
right
I know
now.
What you're asking, but let me tell you something. It's the fact that he was missing in action for the entire first term of Donald Trump. And he said the reason that he was missing in action was that there were restraints on Donald Trump in Donald Trump's own administration. This was the most lawless administration in American history.
This was
the administration that brought us January 6th. This is the administration that brought us the Muslim ban. This is the administration that overturned Roe versus Wade. This was the administration, as I just said, that separated kids from their parents at the border. That's the point that I've made throughout this campaign, as you said during the fact check. It's up to Colorado's voters to decide whether all these lawsuits he's filed since he ran for governor is because it's just political. Where was he during the first term? And we know the answer to that. He didn't believe it was an existential threat to America. I did.
I just want to be clear, you didn't name one lawsuit you would back out of, Mr. Weiser.
I had this attack levied on me months ago. I asked the same question. He's had months to find a single lawsuit that I brought and shouldn't, and he can't. He's making a charge. It's a serious charge, calling me an opportunist, bringing lawsuits for political reasons, not to protect the people of Colorado. When I sue, every time I take it seriously, and I ask two questions. Is the law being broken, and are Coloradans being harmed? If it's a Chesapeake Bay issue that doesn't affect Colorado, I wouldn't sue. But if it's SNAP benefits, if it's Forest Service firefighters being fired, if it's energy funds, I'm going to sue. And if you want to make charges against me, you should have facts to back them up. We, the people, deserve a substantive debate, not character.
This is a substantive debate. Is it illegal? Does it affect Colorado? I would say the answer is there is no lawsuit that more affected Colorado than the lawsuit that more than 20 Democratic attorney generals bought to stop Donald Trump from separating children from their parents at the border. Was that not illegal, Mr. Attorney General?
We're going to talk about that issue.
Was that not?
We're going to talk about that issue. I just think it's important to know.
We're talking about it right now. Was that not illegal?
No,
what we talked
about
now
is you made a charge. You said, I brought these 65 lawsuits for political reasons. You've had months to think about it. You can't name a single one that I shouldn't have brought.
I've said again, Phil, completely consistent with what I said throughout this entire campaign, the failure was the failure to not show up in the first Donald Trump term.
We can continue that conversation when you have an opportunity to talk with each other, perhaps. We're going to move on to immigration. Both of you oppose President Trump's mass deportations of immigrants. A question about each of your tactics, Mr. Bennett. One of your most recent campaign promises is to block ICE from opening detention centers in Colorado like the rumored one in the town of Hudson. You say you want to expand the power of local governments to deny permit requests. How would that stop ICE from putting detention facilities in red counties and towns?
I've said that I think we need to do everything we can to make sure that Trump can't bring his cruel immigration policies to Colorado. And we have to stand up for the civil rights of Coloradans, and we have to stand up for our immigrant community that I have fought for since I was the superintendent of Denver Public Schools and fought to make sure that our kids had access to in-state tuition. Since I was a member of the Gang of Eight in 2013 that wrote the last comprehensive immigration bill in the Senate. So this is not a new issue for me, Marshall. And my suggestions are that we should make it clear that the Donald Trump cannot use state property to put his prisons on that property, that local communities should have the right to be able to use provisions of the law that are available to them to stop infrastructure. They can use that now to, if I'm governor, they'll be able to use it to stop Donald Trump, and that we do everything we can to make sure that kids are not separated from their families in the state of Colorado. That is a very big priority.
And if it's in a red county that does not have state land that wants it, what you're proposing can't stop that, correct?
Say it again, Marshall.
If it's a red county that doesn't have state land, it's private land, they want the ICE facility there, what you're proposing...
I will do everything I can as governor to make sure that there are no Donald Trump ICE facilities in the state of Colorado, whether it's red counties or blue counties.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Mr. Weiser, you sued a Mesa County Sheriff's deputy for helping ICE detain a college student in violation of state law. The Polis administration shared employment records with ICE in response to administrative subpoenas, and you haven't joined that lawsuit brought by a former state worker. Briefly, this is one's just for 30 seconds here. What made the deputy in a Republican county worth suing, but not the Democratic governor?
I have the responsibility as the attorney general to enforce an important public policy. Colorado law enforcement does law enforcement, and only law enforcement. I want immigrant communities to know that when you call 911, you're not jeopardizing your family's potential safety. I also know that we don't have enough law enforcement. We need our law enforcement doing law enforcement. And this administration can't bully us. If law enforcement violates that law, it's my job to hold them to account. As for the governor, I didn't represent him in that matter at all. He was on his own. He was sued by somebody else. And I am not going to stand by what his policies have been there. I'm going to stand for protecting the immigrant community.
Okay, more broadly, besides that law enforcement instance in Mesa County, tell me what, as governor, you would do without the ability to sue.
I want to underscore something that we have authority at the state level to actually do something about this issue. And one of the benefits when you get me as governor is I know our state. I know our state laws. I know how we can protect all communities, including the immigrant community. We have public health inspection authority in Colorado. That is a critical tool that we can use to make sure that any facility that's going to be here is safe and can operate safely. I am committed to looking for and using all tools like that one to protect immigrants. I also am committed to partnering with groups, and we've already done this in our office when we set up a complaint system. If immigrants are being treated unfairly, we're ready, working with other actors to make sure they get legal representation, to make sure that we take action. In Colorado, we believe in treating immigrants under the law fairly and sensibly. I will stand for that principle as your next governor.
Mr. Weiser, thank you.
Sometimes it feels like your primary race is a contest to see who can blame Donald Trump for more things and promise to fight him harder. A question for both of you. What are some issues in Colorado that are not Donald Trump's fault and that Colorado must fix on its own without just casting blame at Trump? Mr. Bennett.
Yeah, I really disagree with your characterization of the race. And I think maybe, Kyle, it's because you're not out there in the town halls that I'm having across the state. Most of what we're talking about is the cost of living crisis that Colorado is having. Most of what we're talking about is the inability for people to be able to live the life that Susan and I lived here in Colorado. And I believe that's where the origins of Donald Trump come from. Now, I don't think he's caused every single problem in Colorado or America. I think he is a symptom of the economic challenges that too many Americans and too many Coloradans are facing. That's why we need to address the housing crisis in Colorado, reduce the cost of housing, reduce the cost of childcare. By the way, we're almost the most expensive state on housing. People are spending $10,000 a year on childcare. Donald Trump didn't cause those problems. We have a healthcare system that is not providing affordable healthcare well, which is why I've proposed that Colorado have a true public option. And I want to make sure that our education system is actually preparing kids for the economy that they're inheriting. And by the way, I would also say fighting Trump is not enough. We need to elect a governor who has a vision for the future to be able to give our kids a chance at the American dream. If we don't do that, we will have failed. And that is one of the fundamental reasons why I decided to run for governor, because I didn't see a candidate with an agenda like that running in Colorado.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Same question to you, Mr. Weiser. Problems in Colorado that are not Donald Trump's fault that we must fix on our own. And if you want to take a little extra time, you're welcome to, because Mr. Bennett did as well. It's an important question.
For those who want the short version, look at the video Future. It talks about my commitment to our kids who deserve better. We had a round table. Cheryl Goodman was there. She's here today. She lost her son to fentanyl. So many kids are losing to gun violence and fentanyl. When I was growing up, car accidents were the number one cause of death for young people. Not anymore. It's a distant third. Our kids deserve better. What Jason said at the round table, I wrote up a blog post about it. You can read. It's easier for kids, for so many, to get access to fentanyl or guns, often using social media, than a job. Think about that. I did a gun violence forum at East High School. Senator Bennett was there too. You all can watch it. We'll make sure it's on our YouTube page. Compare the specificity about my plans on gun violence prevention. Compare my commitment to oversee and regulate social media, which is harming our kids, harming their mental health. Look at my plans to scale up a mentoring program so every Colorado kid can have multiple mentors. Today, 40% have no mentors. And build a Colorado Corps, calling young people to service in teaching, nursing, firefighting, counseling, and more. We must do more for our kids. Our kids deserve better. That's my agenda that I'll be pushing
for. Kyle, I don't disagree with anything really that Phil was just saying, but I think it proves my point, because where Colorado is right now is that we are the third most expensive state in America. Nobody can afford housing. Nobody can afford health care. Nobody can afford child care. People believe that our education system is not preparing themselves for the economy that we are, that they're going to inherit. And these are, in my view, the fundamental issues that we face. Can Colorado be a place where middle-class families can live, where working people can live, where teachers and others can find a home here in Colorado? And if that is your agenda and that's what your concern is, I hope you'll support my campaign. It's not that the things that Phil isn't talking about aren't important, But they are not the main focus that we need to be addressing right now in our state. And frankly, the current leadership in Denver has not addressed it sufficiently.
Mr. Bennett, thank you. Mr. Weiser, do you want to take a second to respond to this idea that you're not focused on the biggest issue facing Colorado, as he describes it?
Here's what I would say. You should elect a candidate with the most comprehensive plans and the experience to get it done. You can hear Senator Bennett describe the problem again and again, but what you're not going to hear a lot of are specific plans and solutions. You're going to hear that from me, because I know our state, and I've been working with leaders across our state on the range of challenges we're facing. We need a governor who can address all of them: housing affordability, protecting our water, public safety, and more. I've got the plans and experience to lead our state as our
Mr. Weiser, thank you. We're going to move on for now. Nice, okay, young. We've got a lot more ground to cover. Question to you both. What is the single most impressive and positive thing that Governor Polis has done for Colorado? And what is the single most disappointing and destructive thing that Governor Polis has done? And you cannot say clemency for Tina Peters, because that's a layup, and we'll talk about
Come
it later.
Come on, man. That's it.
Mr. Weiser.
That's the worst thing.
The worst thing that Governor Polis has done, other than the obvious, this is a little bit like, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how is the play? The worst thing is his vetoes of legislation regulating social media. I talked about this earlier. Our kids are hurting, and social media is part of the problem. I did a report talking about how it's easier for kids to get access to guns and fentanyl on social media than a pizza. We worked on legislation to create accountability for social media companies, to force them to kick people off who did this. Governor Polis vetoed it. I'll sign it. So other than the obvious, that's my pick. As for what he's done best, I would say early childhood education, full-day kindergarten, is an important step. We've got more work to do. I would build on that.
Thank you, Mr. Weiser. Mr. Bennett, same question.
I agree completely on full-day kindergarten and early childhood education. I think that's an important first step. We have a long way to go, but I'm grateful that he was willing to take that on. I also agree that his veto of that social media bill was terrible. There's only one candidate in this race, by the way, who's running for governor, me, who said that if I am elected governor, I will fight to make sure that social media and phones are banned bell to bell in schools all over Colorado. Because what I hear from my colleague over here is studies and bureaucracy and think tanks. That, if you look at the plan, that's what you'll see over and over again. Whereas what I'm fighting for is to make housing so affordable that working people don't have to spend more than 30% of their income on housing. A public option for health care, the only candidate in America who's running on that. A cap and invest program to create a statewide cap on emissions in Colorado. I'm the only candidate running on that in America, and in Colorado, my opponent has said that it would violate Tabor. So I actually don't accept this characterization of my plans, which are very specific and are tailored at the needs of everyday working people in our state.
Mr. Bennett, thank you.
Can I respond?
Mr. Bennett, thank you. Quickly on the phone ban
thing,
what is your disagreement there?
While Senator Bennett was in Washington, I was in Colorado in Grand Junction learning from D51 about how we remove smartphones as a distraction, and we passed a law forcing every school district to adopt a policy that would not allow smartphones to interfere with learning. It's because of the law that I worked on, a bipartisan law, that Denver is now adopting a bell-to-bell ban.
All right, Mr. Weiser, thank you. Mr. Bennett, you have been attacking Mr. Weiser lately as pay-to-play Phil. You are recycling four-year-old claims from a conservative dark money group, which made those allegations during Mr. Weiser's run for attorney general in 2022. Before we get into the substance of the allegations, and we will, a short answer question for you, Mr. Bennett. Those Republican attacks were publicly reported 4 years ago, and you still supported his reelection for attorney general. What's changed now, other than the fact that you're running against him?
Well, my understanding, actually, is that your colleagues in the news media were the ones that exposed the pay-for-play system that you're talking about.
With respect, it came from
Hawaii.
A conservative dark money group,
well,
and the news media identified it as
I don't know anything about that. I know what appeared on television in Colorado from some of your journalist colleagues that referred to the pay-or-play system that he and other attorneys general were involved with.
Okay, so now to the substance of the allegations.
You have said that he took money from corporations and lawyers with business before his office, then gave them special treatment. What evidence do you have that Mr. Weiser gave those interests special treatment, and do you have evidence that was directly tied to the donations?
I think that the evidence is that there, Phil Weiser has accepted roughly $4.5 million of dark money over the years, some of it from oil and gas companies. And during the first term of the Trump administration, not only did he not sue Donald Trump with respect to the kids at the border, he took a pass on some of the most important environmental lawsuits that were brought in this nation, including one that I deeply care about, which was the protection of the Arctic from oil and gas drilling. That was something that there were a whole bunch of attorneys general filed a lawsuit about, and Phil did not want to do it. So I suppose that's where I would tie those two things together.
You may now take a full minute to respond.
I've got to first pick my jaw off the floor. I'm saddened by these desperate, baseless claims. As you pointed out, this was a right-wing dark money attack on me. It was debunked. And after it was out there, Senator Bennett was campaigning with me, praising me to be Attorney General. And here he is now, basically trying to recycle those discredited attacks. This is politics at its cynical worst. Let's talk about my leadership. I will take on anyone who harms Colorado. Look down the list of companies suing to break up Live Nation, breaking up the Kroger-Albertsons merger by being a part of the litigation to stop it, taking on Google, taking on Meta for harming our kids. Whoever you are, if you harm Colorado, I'll take you on. That's my true north. I have no idea how he could come up with a total of $5 million in dark money.
Four and a half.
Okay, I have no idea how that is going, because I'm running campaigns based on the people of Colorado. All the ads you've seen from me in this campaign, they're from my campaign powered by the people of Colorado, 90% more. He's got $7 million or more from out-of-state billionaires, corporations, and dark money. That's a problem in our politics. I want to change Citizens United here in Colorado and get corporate and dark money out of our politics.
Mr. Weiser, thank you. Mr. Weiser, I'd like you to help voters understand what sometimes seems to be some conflicting arguments made by your campaign. Is Mr. Bennett doing such a good job in the U.S. Senate that he needs to stay there while you serve as governor, or is he doing such a bad job in the Senate, failing to stand up to Donald Trump, that he should not be governor? How can it be both?
Here's my message to Michael Bennett. You've made some mistakes. You didn't stand up the way you should. I know you can shape up. Use your seniority. Use your relationship. Use your experience. Build on what has been best in your career. Work like the bipartisan effort to address immigration reform. Be a chair of a committee this fall and represent Colorado the way we deserve. With all that experience, to throw it away would be such a waste for Colorado. My experience, 8 years leading our state as Attorney General, if I am not successful here, we're throwing that experience away. Yes, what's best for Colorado can fit on a bumper sticker. Phil Weiser for governor, Michael Bennett for Senate.
Please.
I would say that bumper sticker politics are exactly what is wrong with our politics. And I made the decision to run for governor because the crisis is real here in Colorado, and we're having a profound crisis in this country. And I take it seriously. I hear a lot of people say that this is an existential moment, and I really happen to believe that. Kyle, I admit that there aren't a lot of people that have served on the floor of the Senate who have decided to run for governor. And even my own mom and Phil, those are the two people that want me to stay in the Senate the most. My mom would love to see me die on the floor of the U.S. Senate, which I think is what every mom, you know, sort of wants for their kid who's actually gotten there. But I think there's much too much for us to address. Look, I want everybody in Colorado to be able to have the experience that Susan and I had raising our three children. And I think that people feel like it's out of reach, or that our political system is so broken and so corrupt that there's no way we can actually fix it, or that the only thing we can expect of our politics is the division and hatred and chaos that Donald Trump represents. I think Colorado can do much better than that.
I think we can
solve the challenges that are facing us, but only if we're focused on
it. Thank you, Mr. Bennett.
Colorado is an increasingly progressive state, putting restrictions on businesses in the name of consumer and environmental protection. Is that driving businesses out of Colorado, Mr. Bennett?
I would say that it is really problematic that we are driving businesses out of Colorado for the first time since the 1980s. And in the 1980s, it was an oil and gas downturn that was the cause. And I think today it's a combination of there being too much red tape, too much regulation, all of which is making it more expensive for families and making it more expensive for businesses of every stripe to operate in Colorado. The good news is I think we can turn it around. I don't think there is a state in America that's got a better economy than ours is. Our aerospace industry, our space industry, the legacy of the cable, you know, folks that are here today, our tech industry and our agriculture industry, just to name a few, we have a lot of depth in Colorado. But I think we have to take a beat and realize that we haven't recovered fully from COVID, that our economy is beginning to send businesses away that are very, very important to our kids being able to have great jobs. And the good news is, I think there's the opportunity for us to build an important coalition between business and families to make sure this state can actually become the affordable state that it needs to be.
Mr. Weiser, are these added regulations driving businesses out of Colorado?
I have said this before, and depending on how much you like garlic, you might not go with this, but regulation should be like garlic in cooking, which is as much as you need, but no more. We need to be rigorous and careful, because when we do adopt more regulatory burdens than necessary, because we're not rigorous and careful, it can make it harder for businesses to operate. And I've heard that about businesses. I heard one today who said it was too hard to get the business located and sited, so they chose Utah instead of Colorado. When I'm governor, I'm going to make sure I'm a champion for business, and businesses know the wind's at their back, not in their face, to make sure I take on these obstacles. And for me, this is personal. I spent my career supporting business development in Colorado, founding a center, founding Startup Colorado, founding the Bridge Entrepreneurs Network, so people can build great companies here.
Mr. Weiser, thank you. Palantir, the surveillance and technology company that's working closely with the Trump administration, was Colorado's largest publicly traded company. They didn't have that many employees here, but then they left in the dark of night in February, and a bunch of progressives said good riddance to them. In a sentence or two, were you sad when Palantir left Colorado, Mr. Weiser?
I don't want companies to leave Colorado. I want this to be a place that all companies want to be. So I'm not going to be happy to see them or anyone go.
Mr. Bennett.
I think it's a tragedy that companies are leaving Colorado, and it's one of the reasons why I'm running for governor. Honestly, look, this is ridiculous.
Okay, I just wanted to ask you about Palantir. No, okay. Both of you guys sad that Palantir left. Very good. Most Democratic primary voters will have supported both of you in previous years, but now they need to make a choice. Mr. Bennett, a vote for Mr. Weiser for governor, as he said here, is a vote to keep both of you in prominent positions of influence for Colorado, you as senator, him as governor. A vote for you as governor is also a vote to send Mr. Weiser off to do who knows what, and then also a vote for who knows who you're going to appoint to the Senate. So for Democratic primary voters who have supported both of you in the past, what do you tell voters who are hesitant to vote for you for governor, knowing that it takes him out of the game and introduces some mystery senator we don't know about?
Well, so first of all, I would say that, in my opinion, this is not about me and Phil. It's not about our jobs. It's about the families all over our state, and especially the next generation, that are struggling with the insane expenses they're having to cover, the cost of groceries, the cost of gas, the cost of educating their own children. These are middle-class things that people should be able to afford. In Colorado, they don't afford it. That's what I think we should be focused on. And by the way, we're not at this election, so I would ask people that are voting for Phil, we'd love to have you as part of this campaign before or after the primary. With respect to the next person that would come to the Senate, I think that's a really important point. And I think Colorado has an amazing opportunity here to elect somebody who has the breadth of experience I do. I'm the only candidate in this race who's been in the private sector, who's run the largest school district in Colorado, who's had national leadership for the last three terms. And now we will have a Senate, this is the commitment that I'll make to you, Kyle, in Colorado that is going to be less than 50 years old. That may not satisfy my mother's hope for the United States Senate, but I think that's going to be awesome from Colorado's perspective. And I think people around the country will look at that and say, man, that is a better way of dealing with these transitions of of power and the service in office.
Mr. Bennett, I have more questions on this. So if we could get into a little bit more, then you'll have an opportunity to respond. So for everybody who is trying to figure out the mystery senator at home now, we know that it is somebody who is under the age of 50. We also know that it's not Jared Polis. So let me ask you this. All right, you opened a can of worms when you said that you would not appoint Jared Polis to the Senate, which got a big applause line from Democrats who were upset that he gave clemency to Tina Peters.
Well,
but let me say, you won't tell us who's on your short list to be appointed.
Look,
will you tell us who's on the no list with Polis?
The only reason why I mentioned what I did was about Jared was that I totally disagreed with what he did on Tina Peters. And my friend Phil has been telling Democrats for 18 months that I was going to appoint Jared Polis to the U.S. Senate.
All right, fair
That's
enough.
That's not true.
Have you decided already?
I absolutely have not. I have not had a conversation about it in Colorado.
All right. Let's get some clarifying questions, because as you say, this is important. You're going to have the opportunity to weigh in, okay? You were once appointed to the Senate, and then you ran to keep the seat, and you did.
That's true.
For a generation.
That's true.
That was not a knock. Why are people laughing?
Well, apparently a generation's not enough.
So I want to get your thought process on this. Are you looking to play kingmaker and select somebody that you want to finish your term or run for another? And the fact that you're talking about a young person suggests that you are. Or would you consider like a caretaker or custodian who would then run, who would be there for the rest of your term, but then allow voters to select their own choice without your influence?
You asked me that once before, Kyle, and I told you that I honestly haven't thought about it. I don't know. I think it would be presumptuous of me to be making this decision in advance, and I haven't thought about it, and I don't know. What I have thought is that it would be excellent to have somebody in this job that's under the age of 50. That is the extent to which I've thought about.
My last short answer question for you on this. A cynical person might say that the reason that you're not announcing who's going to take your seat in the Senate is because this is now the ultimate prize to dangle over Colorado Democratic politics, to get them to endorse and back you for governor over Mr. Wozniak, that those who want to be in the Senate or work for that person or have a future in state Democratic politics need to get in line. I'm not a cynical person, but I am curious. Is that what you're doing?
That is not what I'm doing. What I'm doing is, Kyle, running a campaign that's actually about the future of our state and the reality that we are now the third most expensive state in America, and as you said, losing business in this state. By the way, that really is what people in Colorado are focused on right now. And
which is why we just talked about it. Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Mr. Wiser, I'd like to hear from you on this, but could you please spell it exactly how you would handle it if you were in his shoes? Who's making the pick? What kind of pick? When would the name be announced? Don't just criticize him. Tell us how you would do it.
If I were in his shoes and I thought I want to be governor, not senator, I would have resigned, left the Senate, let someone else do that job and run for governor. That's what the Denver Post editorial said. That would have been the right thing to do. If you want to keep your Senate seat because you're not sure you really want to be governor, you're going to win and you can stay there, that's giving voters a choice that they should exercise. And in doing that, you get to make both of our moms happy.
Mr. Wiser, thank you.
I got one more point I want to say here, which is you can also make a statement about our politics. Look at our campaign. The ads you're seeing are people-powered, over 90% Coloradans leading from the grassroots. Senator Bennett has a super PAC with out-of-state billionaires, with companies like Sigma and Uber and others, who knows what their agendas is, with dark money. We don't have to let that win. Not only can we vote and vote for the grassroots candidate, but I'll be the candidate who overturned Citizens United in Colorado, changed our campaign finance law so corporations can't do this.
Mr. Bennett, let's try to keep everybody's moms happy as you ask each other questions. Your question for Mr. Wiser.
My question for Phil is that you said on this stage tonight that the way you choose lawsuits is what's illegal and what's important to Colorado, and yet you failed to join your colleague attorneys generals in the lawsuit they brought to stop the Trump administration from separating kids from their parents at the border. Is that because you thought it wasn't illegal, or is that because you thought it wasn't important to Colorado?
Of course, separating kids from parents is awful. I am a first-generation American. My mom and my grandmother survived and were liberated from the Holocaust by U.S. Army soldiers. And they came here as refugees. I care deeply about this. In the first Trump term, state AGs were not as organized. We are now. We are on the case. And I've been on the case knowing what Trump 2 was going to be like. By the way, that action you talked about was led by someone you voted for. We need to make sure that we are ready and that we are going to do our best work and learn from the past. What I would say about Trump, too, is you didn't get ready for it. I was ready. That's why I took the actions I did.
Mr. Weiser, your question for Mr. Bennett.
You've talked a lot, including press conferences, including in ads, about how you want to reform ICE. But the twist is you said, I want to become governor to reform ICE, but Congress has the job of whether we give ICE funding. You've continued to vote for increases in ICE funding in Trump 1. You voted in Trump 2 to give ICE more detention powers. How can voters think you're going to actually do something about this as governor when you've had the authority as senator, you haven't?
I have fought ICE and what Trump is doing with ICE all along the way, and that's what I will continue to do as governor. I am not going to allow Donald Trump to send masked agents into Colorado or to allow him to have federal agents knocking on doors without warrants or knocking down doors without warrants. And I'm certainly not going to allow him to separate kids at the border. That answer, by the way, to the last question said, he said that the attorney generals in America weren't organized well enough for the Trump first term. There were more than 20 Democrats who filed a lawsuit against Donald Trump separating kids from their parents at the border. And it's important for Colorado to know this. I wish we were talking about the cost of living stuff that I've been talking about all night tonight. But the reason it's important is it is a test. It is a test of whether you're willing to fight this fight and whether you're tough enough to fight this fight. And honestly, today in Denver, he had no answer to the question that I asked.
Mr. Bennett, you trailed from answering at the end of there, but let's move on to unions want to change Colorado's Labor Peace Act, which makes it harder to collect union dues from all employees and collectively bargain. Governor Polis has said any change must have the support of the business community, and he's twice vetoed a bill that would eliminate the second vote that would be needed to form a union. Mr. Weiser, would you have signed the pro-union bill Polis vetoed? Short answer here, please.
I'm committed to getting rid of the antiquated Labor Peace Act, substituting it. It's going to be done through a process to get to a conclusion. It may well not be what was before him, but it's going to be the right thing for Colorado.
Mr. Bennett, you've called for compromise. The unions don't want a compromise. They want one vote to form a union just like every other state. So what's your compromise?
My compromise would be to keep the second vote, but reduce the difficulty of being able to pass that second vote. And I don't think it's helped very much that the governor has said that he would veto the bill in advance. I think that's taken away leverage in a negotiation. I think we can do better than that. So my hope is that we will be able to get to a negotiated result here that will make sense for labor and make sense for business in Colorado.
Thank you to you both.
The labor bill is just one example of how Governor Polis has been a consistent check on progressives' priorities in the state legislature, forcing them to significantly strip down bills to get a signature or just vetoing bills outright. He vetoed 12 bills, a new record for him this year. I'm going to walk you through just a handful of bills that the governor vetoed and ask you for a short answer on each. You're welcome to tell me how you would have changed the bills if you had the opportunity, but at the end of the day, just like the governor, you got to make a decision, sign it or veto it. Governor Polis vetoed a bill allowing people to sue federal officers in state court if their civil rights are violated during immigration enforcement operations. Polis said it was too legally risky. He said there were loopholes for activity during prison actions and protests. Sign it or veto it, Mr. Bennett?
Sign it.
Mr. Weiser?
Sign it.
You both mentioned earlier that you would have signed the bill that Governor Polis vetoed requiring major social media platforms to comply with law enforcement warrants within 24 hours. You were heard on that earlier.
Polis talked about a different one, Kyle, but I would have signed that one.
You would have signed that one as well? Okay, I didn't get the distinction earlier, so I'll ask you, Mr. Bennett, as well. That social media bill inspired by the Evergreen community after the shooting there to require social media companies to report threats, Governor Polis said it was a free speech infringement.
I would have signed that bill.
Signed it. Thank you. Governor Polis vetoed a bipartisan bill restricting driverless trucks on Colorado roads. It would have required a licensed driver in the truck with the automated driving system. Polis pointed out accurately that most wrecks are caused by human error, and he said the bill was bad for innovation. Sign it or veto it, Mr. Bennett?
I would have vetoed that bill, but I think that it reveals a very important set of issues we need to negotiate better in Colorado.
Mr. Weiser.
I think we need to figure out a way to make sure that any of these technologies, autonomous driving, is safe, and we need the right guardrails there and in other contexts as well.
If it came to you as it came to Polis, sign or veto?
I'm not sure if I would have signed this bill, but the concept of how we oversee this, we need guardrails, we need oversight.
Last year, Governor Polis vetoed a bill that would have kept landlords from using algorithmic software to set rent prices. Consumer advocates say it allows landlords to collude, drive up people's rent. The governor said the software is legitimate and that landlords can still be punished if they falsely inflate rent prices. The ban on algorithmic software to set rent prices, sign it or veto it. Mr. Weiser?
I absolutely would sign it. I've got a lawsuit on the same point.
Mr. Bennett?
I would sign it as well.
And then lastly, are there any bills that Governor Polis signed this legislative session that you would call out right now and say, actually, I would have vetoed that? Mr. Bennett?
Nothing comes to mind, right?
Fair enough. Very good. Let's talk about Tina Peters. Both of you opposed Governor Polis freeing Tina Peters less than 2 years into her 9-year sentence related to a breach of Colorado's voting systems. Short answer from each of you. What would have been the proper amount of time for Tina Peters to actually spend in prison for her crime, knowing that if you're sentenced to 9 years, you don't actually spend 9 years in prison? How long should she have been locked up? Mr. Bennett.
I think that's one of the things so discouraging about this whole episode. She only served 19 months, and that is far too little for her crime. And I would say also that we have a profound problem in Colorado and in this nation with mass incarceration. And I'm very sorry that we've spent our time dealing with this with Tina Peters, who I think should never have been let out, and instead addressing the mass incarceration problem we have in Colorado for people who have not had the chance to be able to build their own lives in a successful way. And I want to say, as governor, that is something that I am desperate for the chance to work on.
Very good. Mr. Weiser, again, the question is, how long should Tina Peters have spent in prison?
She should have served up until the time that she was eligible for parole and been treated like any other prisoner. A core problem in this case is we saw a deviation from core basic justice principles, giving someone special treatment because of who she was. That's wrong. On mass incarceration, I've got real plans and commitments, and I've been doing work on how we improve when people leave prison going back into society. In Colorado, right now, 45% of people leaving prison end up back in within 3 years. The national average is 37%. We can do a lot better. I've been working on some of these issues, including addressing addiction, including giving people skills. That'll be one of my priorities as next governor.
Thank you.
There's rising anti-Semitism in America. Jewish voters have supported Democrats by wide margins for generations. In Colorado, there have been multiple protest events where some argue Democrats in charge are tolerating anti-Semitism. How do you clamp down on anti-Semitism without stifling free speech, Mr. Bennett?
Well, I think this is a huge problem, not just in Colorado, but in our nation, the rise of anti-Semitism. And we have to fight it. And we need to make sure that we fight it at every single turn. It is metastasizing in ways that it has throughout our history. At the same time, I think it is really important for us to recognize that there has been a rise of Islamophobia, too, in this state and in this nation. And we cannot import these ancient hatreds to this country. We are, as you said at the very outset, somebody did here, this is a pluralistic nation. This is a nation where we believe in freedom of religion. We each have an obligation to make sure that people feel like they can express their religious freedom. And today, in Colorado, there are people that are children, students, who are hiding the Star of David because of the anti-Semitism that we're seeing, and they're Muslim children who are not dressing as they would to hide who they are. That is a tragedy beyond measure in Colorado, and we need a governor who's going to work very hard, as I will, to bring us together.
Mr. Weiser, how do you clamp down on anti-Semitism without stifling free speech?
There may be no issue more personal to me than rising hate and demonization of others. Othering, which can happen to Jews, can happen to the LGBTQ community, can happen to immigrants, can happen to Muslims, is on the rise. Hating is on the rise. As governor, I will honor our American ethos, e pluribus unum, out of many, we are one. George Washington wrote a letter to a Rhode Island synagogue and said, in America, this is aspirational, bigotry has no sanction. He then quoted from the book of Micah and said, let everyone live safely under their own vine and fig tree. It was actually celebrated in Hamilton. That's what we need to do for all communities. And we need to let communities speak and be heard and have dialogue. That's why I showed up with Colorado Muslim Votes to have a respectful dialogue. I was the only candidate who showed up. That's why they endorsed me, and I promised to work with them on this issue.
This is a yes or no. I'm a nerd for this topic. It's Tabor. In 2019 and 2023, Colorado voters rejected ballot issues to let the state keep some or all of future Tabor refunds. This November, voters will be asked again to give up Tabor refunds for the foreseeable future. Part of that money will go to K-12 education. The rest of the money could ultimately be for whatever lawmakers choose to spend it on. Yes or no, do you support the ballot measure taking Tabor refunds away for the foreseeable future, Mr. Weiser?
Yes.
Mr. Bennett?
Yes.
Each of you a short answer on this question as we approach closings. A few sentences, if you would. How do you convince rural Coloradans that Democrats care about them, their communities, and their values? And I know that both of you are going to point to the work that you have already done in Colorado, but yet the urban-rural divide persists in our state. A sentence or two from each of you. How do you convince rural Colorado feel less alienated? Mr. Weiser.
I've every year sponsored the Joint Organizations Leading Transition, or JOLT, conference in Western Colorado. I was there last year. They asked me a question, because I've always been there with them. They said, how do we make sure you're our next governor and not Michael Bennett? Because we know you care about us. Rural Colorado leaders know me. They trust me. That's how I'm going to continue to operate.
Mr. Bennett, a sentence or two.
Can I use one to...
Please, just go.
I would just say that... This is a place that I've put my attention the entire time that I've been in the Senate. I was very proud just last week or the week before to announce that the Shoshone water deal finally got done in Colorado. That is the most important thing we've done in a generation on Western water in Colorado. And I want to give on this stage of a Democratic primary credit to Jeff Hurd, a Republican congressman, for bringing that final...
Mr. Bennett, we need to get to closings. You have 1 minute for your closing statement.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me here, and thank you all. Thank you all for being here. I love being at DU, and I'm grateful to be here with Attorney General Weiser. I said at the very outset of this debate that I was running because when I followed Susan here to Colorado, we were able to buy a house we could afford. We were able to raise our three kids. Today, there are too many people in Colorado that are in tears because they can't have a family. They say to me, Michael, we had one kid, we'll never be able to have a second kid, or we're never going to be able to have a family at all. And there are people that are giving up on whether or not we can actually address these issues. And when you're dealing with the chaos and insanity of Donald Trump, I can see why people feel that way. Colorado can set a different example. We can address these issues. We can make sure that our kids can afford to live here and have childcare here. And at the same time, we can set an example of working together that's going to stand in stark contrast to the divided politics of Donald Trump. If you elect me governor of Colorado, I promise that Colorado's future will not be defined by Donald Trump, and our children's future will not be defined by Donald Trump.
Mr. Weiser.
My why for service is what I said in my last answer. The fact that I'm alive is a miracle. U.S. soldiers showing up 5 days after my mom was born in the Buchenwald concentration camp. And my grandmother was an amazing woman, and she had a commitment in her mind after she survived the Holocaust to come to America. She believed in this land of freedom and opportunity for all. And I grew up on those values and a commitment to serve, which is why I've spent my whole life in service. I came to Colorado after law school, and I love Colorado. I love how in Colorado, we care about one another. We're facing a challenging moment now, like we did in 1986 when we elected Roy Romer. And as your governor, I'll stand strong against this lawless, bullying administration to protect our freedoms. And I'll work with every community and fight for a better future, housing, food, childcare, healthcare that everyone can afford, fighting for our kids' future and for safe and thriving communities. It would be an honor to serve you. I'd be honored to have your vote.
Thank you to the candidates, to our hosts at DU, and thank all of you for watching at home.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.